coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation. It's your host, Doug Hagman.
This is the Hagman Report for today. It is November 10th, 2021. The big news all across the corporate media, of course, is the cost of living, a 6.2% increase. This is a big deal. The 6.2% increase in the inflation increase or cost of living. Biggest, of course, food and fuel. And I talked about this yesterday, but I want to kind of put this in a perspective that I don't think many people are really, well, outside of this audience, I don't think many people are really kind of looking at this in the bigger picture. Of course, there's a war on coal, there's a war on oil, and everything is being pushed to electric. But why is that? Why? You've got, I think we have to look at the bigger picture here. And the bigger picture, of course, is, in at least in my view, based on everything I've seen, again, the bigger picture behind this is to create like a pincher movement against the population. And that goes for the coronavirus, or what is called the coronavirus, SARS-CoV-2, whatever you want to call it, the bioweapon that was created and unleashed. I'm going to be getting into all of this and how it relates to the enslavement of the population. The other thing I want to get into as well, just briefly, Greg Reese did a story about the, Travis Scott? Eric the Tech, is it Travis Scott? Yeah, that. Thank you. That whole issue behind Travis Scott, the deaths there at that concert. Of course, he supposedly went to a party afterwards without any regard to what happened. There were some issues with respect to some stories about people falling over that were not caught up in this mosh pit mess. So it's really kind of interesting. But the concept behind the production and the intent behind the production, this goes into, or it overlaps into, what people like Craig Sawyer and Russ Dizdar and myself, what we found in the trafficking of humans, human sex trafficking, child sex trafficking. And this also goes into the open borders policy. Now, all of this to me is related specifically with respect to the open borders. Because the drug cartels, it's known, the drug cartels are the biggest shippers or the biggest purveyors of human trafficking, the human commodity, including children as well. So I find it interesting that on October 19th of this year, Ron Johnson, Senator Ron Johnson, sent a letter to the head of the DHS asking how many, since January 1st, how many aliens, illegals, have been transported by either DHS or their contractors to a final destination by plane, by train, by bus, throughout the country since January 1st of 2021. This was a request made to DHS and DHS Secretary. Now, that letter contained some limited data from DHS that showed more than 500,000 border crossers and illegal aliens, roughly 530,000 have been released into the U.S. interior from January 1 through August 31st. Now think about that for a second. More than 500,000 border crossers, illegals, have been transported, released into the United States. There's been no response from the DHS, none whatsoever. He asked for data, Senator Johnson asked for data about border or gang members, criminal alien deportations and such. Catch and release totals, no response. Now, all of this speaks to a bigger, I believe, a bigger agenda here. And have you noticed, really, since 2012 and beyond, have you noticed, folks, that we've been seeing an increase in occult-like activity? Jack Posobiec mentioning this in Twitter. I want to cut to video one, clip one here. Greg Reese did a great job on the Travis Scott concert, but in a larger scale. I think this should speak volumes to what's going on. Let's play clip number one.
Is built upon the balance between competition and cooperation, where cooperation is often simply not harming each other. Today's laws, based on Christian ideology, compel us to restrain our animal selves. Satanism is the opposition to this balance. It seeks to destroy Christian ideology so that the law is written by the ruthless, because ruthlessness is their only advantage. In a healthy society, those who seek to feed off of others are forced into hiding. But today, they are hiding no more. After decades of it being injected into pop culture media, we are becoming all too familiar with the satanic rituals these miscreants love to celebrate. Whatever actually happened at Travis Scott's Astroworld Festival, it was clearly designed as a satanic ritual. There are different names of gods who demand human sacrifice, but Moloch has been the most popular. And we can see the obvious depiction at Astroworld, where people could symbolically volunteer to ritually sacrifice themselves into the mouth of Moloch. But the real symbolism can be seen on stage, the spiraling portal, with non-human entities and flames emerging from it. The same ritual we've seen at the Gothard Base Tunnel opening ceremony in 2016, where a portal was opened and demonic entities were unleashed. The same ritual made famous by Aleister Crowley, the birth of the Antichrist, the Amalantra working, the cross being fed into the portal of hell. In other words, the death and destruction of humanity as we know it, the coal, depopulation. 8 people died and dozens were rushed to the hospital, with at least 11 suffering from heart attacks. Victims as young as 9 years old. Videos show several people having seizures and collapsing. A security guard claims that someone stuck him with a syringe, and rumors have resulted that people were drugged. But isn't it more likely, given that these are the same reactions we have been seeing from the experimental jabs, that they are one and the same? Statistically speaking, if you get enough of the vaxxed in one place, injuries like this will occur. The entire world has become rife with human sacrifice, and these rituals are likely meant to give themselves the illusion of legitimacy, but they are merely the rotten parasites in an otherwise humane world. The real concern is that their anti-human culture is going mainstream. For InfoWars.com, this is Greg Reese.
All right, thank you, Greg Reese. Now, again, folks, I'm going to kind of skip around here a little bit, but that kind of gives you an idea. Remember those weird things that happened back in 2016, even 2012, with respect to the opening ceremonies and different events, the tunnel, CERN. Okay, and even go back further to the Georgia Guidestones. You know, when somebody goes to that length to put up in 12 languages, they want to reduce the population down to, you kill off 7.3 billion people. I got to tell you, you might want to listen to what their intent is. Now, you might ask yourself, what does this have to do with the price of energy, with the 6.2% in inflation, plus the inflation on the 40% increase in Thanksgiving costs and what have you? as well as the war against oil and gas and coal. This is all to encapsulate, to subjugate a population into not just clean energy. Clean energy really is merely a smokescreen. Pardon the pun. It's merely a means to an end. The end is subjugation of the population, ultimately decimation, death of the of 7 billion people. Yes, I said that. That's the bigger picture. But they're doing it in ways to make it sound like, okay, you know, unfortunate. Hey, this coronavirus, boy, you know, we got to develop these vaccines, which are not vaccines. And again, there's death and destruction behind that, but they're also going after your money, your things, the stuff you own, which is why Conservative Treehouse, and this sparked my interest as well. Conservative Treehouse, there's an article by Sundance yesterday. Treasury Department nominee says Biden administration purposely wants to bankrupt oil, gas, and coal companies. Now, I talked about this woman back about a month ago on this show. Sowell Omarova. And I had just the same problem pronouncing her name then as I do now. When you look at this article, this article points out how the people within this regime, they're some people say they're incompetent. No, they're not. They know exactly what they're doing. And they are destroying the U.S. economic system on purpose. It's a deliberate situation, folks. Understand this. If it was incompetence, we could almost forgive them. But it's not. When you have the Treasury Department nominee, who is a Marxist, Maoist, communist, globalist, saying that essentially they're going to bankrupt all of the businesses and enjoy doing so. They're going to bankrupt oil, coal, and natural gas companies. Well, you better take notice. You better start looking at what their agendas are. If somebody says they're going to kill you, you better pay attention. There's a video on this. Listen carefully to this video. Watch carefully. Go ahead and play that one when you have the opportunity.
For certain troubled industries and firms that are in transitioning. And here what I'm thinking about is primarily coal industry and oil and gas industry. A lot of the smaller players in that industry are going to probably go bankrupt in short order. At least we want them to go bankrupt if we want to tackle climate change, right?
Did you hear that? Okay. Now, when you go to that article, you can click the More button. There is a pictograph underneath that video. Or I think it's underneath the video or a couple of pictures below that. And it's got the Build Back Better logo all across, really, recover, Build Back Better. It's all across the world. It's not just in America. It's all across the world. There it is right there on your screen. If you're watching this by way of Rumble or Brighteon, you can see that this is a global agenda. You can see where this is going. All right. They're not just after big oil, coal, oil and gas. No. They're after our way of life. They're after, this is a method and manner in which to change our behavior and to subjugate us to this communist globalist agenda. Actually, a satanic agenda. It's a globalist agenda that is fueled by the satanic. And folks, you know, I can't convince you of that if you're not willing to open your mind. I'm not talking about the core audience here. I'm talking about people who maybe stumble onto this program and saying, what the heck is this? But you understand the entirety of this whole concept is steeped in Satanism. It is motivated by this worship of Moloch. You heard it with Greg Reese. Now, while we're on Conservative Treehouse, There's one more article right below that. Again, published yesterday. But I want to just touch on this as well. Because with this bioweapon, this Anglo-Asian bioweapon, and I was in communication with Craig Sawyer yesterday, and he sent me just a tremendous expose on this about the attack on humanity, both with the bioweapon, the people, and the alleged or the ill-named vaccine. And I was putting some things together. Actually, we both were. And it's easy to see how we are being, not punked, but we are being slowly killed. Certain demographics are being slowly killed, and in some cases not so slow, by either the bioweapon or this genetic tool. But on Conservative Treehouse, and this really drives this home, we know that there is censorship. We know there's censorship. You say something wrong about either the bioweapon or the so-called vaccine, you are going to get censored because they cannot argue. There's no way that they can argue they will lose in any argument when you talk about this, when you talk facts. Newsmax and Twitter suspend Emerald Robinson for vaccine wrongthink. Now, you might say, well, yeah, so what? I mean, it's bound to happen. But she was a journalist who worked for Newsmax as a White House correspondent. She's also a free thinker, challenges communal orthodoxy, rebels against groupthink. In short, writes Sundance, Mrs. Robinson is a subversive voice who refused to correct her thoughts and become a stenographer for the regime. And this is what we're seeing all across the board. As a result, her employer, Newsmax, has suspended her tenure. Now, I said something, and you keep that frame right there. I said something about you better watch the alternative media sources, who you listen to, who you put your stock in. Do I need to say anything more? We had this conversation during the Patreon meeting, and I was asked, well, who would you kind of be suspicious of? Again, do I need to say anything more? Right, Sundance, the Ministry of COVID Compliance was not happy with Mrs. Robinson and requested that she attend further re-education. And it's kind of funny. You can click through the links there. But here we are. Now, I'm going to quickly move on to this, which is, again, this solidifies what we've been talking about. This is out of Pfizer. I'm sorry. Can we go to the Twitter, just the brief Twitter hit? Because I want to end on the Dr. David Martin. This appeared on Twitter. And people who spread misinformation, and this is coming. It's here, but it is going to be coming even worse in the days ahead, in the weeks ahead, in the months ahead. I would suggest between now and the end of the year, you are going to see, folks, you're going to see a tremendous change in how so-called misinformation is handled. The censorship will increase. The penalties for spreading so-called misinformation will increase. It will become a criminal act in the United States. You will get a knock on the door like James O'Keefe did. I'm sorry, he didn't get a knock on the door. He got his door torn off. That had to do with the Biden diary, of course, the alleged Biden diary, but I digress. But this is how it's going to be handled here in the United States by the globalist regime. The intelligence communities all work for the globalist regime. Folks, we know that. My goodness, we know that. The FBI, they're doing the bidding for the globalists. I don't want to hear word one about, well, you know, some are, you know, the foot soldiers, you know, the rank and file, they're good people. My ass are good people. They wouldn't have kicked in James O'Keefe's door. People who spread misinformation on COVID-19 vaccines are criminals. This is according to Pfizer CEO Albert, I don't even know how you, Bourla. And this was Tuesday. Go ahead and run this.
But there is a very small part of professionals which they circulate on purpose misinformation so that they will mislead those that they have concerned. Those people are criminals. They're not bad people. They're criminals because they literally costed millions of lives.
And then should be treated as criminals as well, those who have done that.
All right. There it is. I'm telling you right now, they're coming for you. You post something on social media, you're going to be tagged as a criminal. And if, for example, if you don't get your door kicked in, your privileges are going to be revoked. Social credit score? Absolutely. Now, I want to really make sure, because yesterday I spent some time on this, I really want to make sure the words of Dr. David Martin, PhD, I'm going to make sure that the linguistics, how we talk and how we deal with the pandemic, the plandemic, the scandemic, whatever you want to call it, how we deal with this issue, the linguistics, the language is pure. Whether it's a vaccine, whether it is the criminal acts that were taking place, or whether it is the actual bioweapon. Did the bioweapon come from nature? Why is this important? Because we have to know where it came from in order to handle, in order to gauge our response and to plan our response. Watch this video. This is Dr. David Martin. This is from September of 2020. This is not new. This is over a year old. But it does set the stage. Dr. David Martin with David Knight sets the stage for exactly where we are today in terms of the criminality of what happened, Wuhan, who was involved, and the rollout of this jab juice, the bioweapon itself, and why this is all taking place now and why it's important. Go ahead and watch this.
There is a disease or not. Unfortunately, I think they're going to get something. They've been working on this for quite some time, and they've been trying to do gain-of-function research, and we ought to all go back and take a look at why our government is doing this. When they continued, they were told to shut down and to stop doing this after all the accidents that around 2013, 2014, they were reported so widely in the media. And so Congress got involved in that. They said, all right, we want you guys to stop. They didn't stop.
Yeah.
Instead, what they did was they continued this at UNC Chapel Hill. They gave $3.7 million to the Wuhan research to do this exact research, coronavirus and bats. And when the research was published from UNC Chapel Hill, you had a big outcry. People said, what's going on? I think it was 2015. This was supposed to have stopped a couple of years ago. And Francis Collins just said at the NIH, Fauci's boss said, no, we just decided that we'd continue doing this. They don't care what anybody says. They don't care what the Constitution says or the law or Congress or anybody. They're going to do whatever they want.
Now, this has been a criminal organization for a very long time. Remember that Department of Health and Human Services and the National Institutes of Health and NIAID and CDC are criminal colluding parties.
Yes.
And I'm saying that word, and that's a heavy word, right? I'm not saying it lightly.
Mm-hmm.
The interesting way I define criminal is if there is a explicit law that you are explicitly violating.
Yes.
Right? For me,
right.
That's a crime.
Right.
Now, I understand that the intent goes into the criminality and the nature of everything else. I understand those things. But at the end of the day, this is a criminal organization.
Mm-hmm.
And it is important to realize that in 2013 and 2014, the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, had a tiny little problem because they got an ethics committee together to examine whether or not it would be appropriate to create a synthetic mutant strain of the Wuhan Institute of Virology coronavirus.
Pay attention.
I wish I was making this up, David.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I wish I was telling you something that was my imagination, a bad dream. And I'm going to wake from this bad dream and realize that, oh, I must have read that wrong. But I didn't, because in 2013, six miners who were working a cave in China developed all of the symptoms that we now call COVID-19. That was in 2013.
Mm.
Okay.
Mm.
And Ralph Baric's lab and the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill Investigation Review Board for their ethics committee got together and said, yes, we think it's ethical, even though NIH had said it's illegal.
Yeah.
We think it's ethical to take a Chinese pathogen and come up with synthetic mutations of a Chinese pathogen called the Wuhan Institute of Virology Coronavirus 1 in 2016. You cannot look at that and say there is anything but criminal intent.
Yes.
Because the government representing the people of the United States has said that this is unethical.
Yes.
Right? We and have said we're not going to fund it. We have said that this is a line that we cannot cross.
Mm-hmm.
And what does Fauci do? He writes another check and is proud of the fact that through an alliance between National Institutes of Health, NIAID, and DARPA, we're not talking about $3.7 million laundered through EcoHealth Alliance,
mm-hmm.
because that was money laundering, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is
mm-hmm.
when you actually provide capital to the party who's not the beneficiary of the capital.
That's right.
Money laundering, right? Wire fraud. How many things can we throw on this thing? They knew they were doing it. And not only did they do it, but they also got $1.7 billion a year mm-hmm. of our money, our taxpayer dollars, $1.7 billion a year that was directed through NIAID to deal with bioterrorism and biohazard research. Now, the cool thing about that money is it goes into black holes all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Vanderbilt, Emory, you know, right here, University of Texas system gets a lot of that money. There are tons of programs around the country that are getting this money. And the great thing about it is it goes through so many different affiliations that you can't follow it.
Yeah.
But the best part about that news is that if Attorney General Barr was awake right now, he would realize that they handed him the case of a lifetime, right? Fauci should have a federal indictment. He should be cuffed on camera. He should be hauled off. And all this grandfather nonsense, oh, he's 79. He looks like a grandfather. Grandfathers can't be wrong. You know what? Stalin looked like a grandfather.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Stalin impacted the lives of 40 million Russians. Guess what Fauci's done?
Yes.
He has actually destroyed the livelihoods of 60 million Americans.
Yes. Destroyed right? the middle class.
So, yeah. So when I get the emotional response of, oh, you can't beat up an old guy. Well, actually, I'm not beating up an old guy. I'm pointing out that a criminal, and once again, let's be precise. What is the crime? The crime is by sitting on three boards and being the director of funds. He has violated the Clayton Act of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he may have 1,000 reasons why he thinks it's justified, but it isn't. It's a violation of the law.
That's right.
And he should be cuffed. He should be tried. And I would add to everything else the fact that when you authorize a foreign pathogen to enter the United States after the U.S. government has said it is unethical to do gain-of-function research, that's intent.
Yeah.
That's premeditated.
That's right.
Somebody is actually using this criminal to act an unspeakable amount of terror on the U.S. and the global population.
Mm-hmm.
And they're using him because they know he's compromised.
All right. We're going to cut it right there. The full clip will be on a link at HagmanReport.com in the episode description box. My apologies. My jaw hurts like, you know, you can't believe. Nonetheless, so what's this all about? What this is all about is killing people. And by the way, whether he said it here or elsewhere, you cannot have something that occurs in nature being patented, which has happened with previous patents on this coronavirus. There is no novel coronavirus. It's a synthetic adaptation of that. So people are lying. People are engaged in criminal activity. There it is. And that's from September of 2020. All right, coming up next, Richard Proctor, ProvisInstitute.com. I want to thank everyone for joining me today, tonight. I want to thank you so much for subscribing to us on Rumble, on Brighteon, and also bookmarking HagmanReport.com. Going to be right back after this. Stay right where you're at. You know, as I mentioned the first hour, what is on everyone's mind, of course, Thanksgiving, the costs are highest ever. This is going to be the most expensive Thanksgiving in the history of America, in the history of the West. Consumer or the PPI is up, the inflation is up. Excluding food and energy, two categories of goods that are central to cost of living of to households, the people who watch the figures, who watch the numbers, who watch the trends of inflation, inflationary trends, exclude food and energy. Because why? Because that would just set the inflation off the charts. Okay, well, what am I talking about in the larger sense? I'm talking about the economy. And it's my view, it's my personal view, that the economy is being tanked on purpose, as I went in through the first hour. The reason being, of course, they want to, in the larger picture, in the bigger picture, they want to subjugate us, they want to enslave us, and they want to kill us. Ultimately, they want to kill us and take our stuff, right? That's, and they want to have what God has given us to use, to consume. They want that for themselves as small g gods themselves. That's where this whole thing is going, and we have to look, in my view, at the bigger picture. But there's an element here that really, folks, you need to pay attention to. And that's trade, that's the economy, that's things that really kind of are particulates, are parts of the spokes on the wheel, shall we say. And there's some differences, there's some things that I really believe that you really need to understand. So with me is Dr. Richard Proctor, ProvisInstitute.com. Link will be in the program description box, that's ProvisInstitute.com. He's got some great specials, too, and things he's going to be talking about. So I'm going to bring him in. I want to let him explain the certain factors of the economy, certain things about trade. And with that is Dr. Richard Proctor. Richard, thank you so much for being with me today.
Good to see you today. It's very fine. It's very fine. You know, you just talked about inflation. You talked about the prices, PPI, all those kind of things. Okay. But there's another factor that people don't know about at all, outside of economists, and some of them don't know it either. It's to do with the law of comparative advantage and free trade coupled with standard of living. Those three items. The law of comparative advantage is quite simple, actually, but the economists make it very difficult. It's quite simple. It's stated like this. If you can do something better than somebody else, you'll do that. You'll do that which is best for you. In other words, you want to make a profit, which is not selfish. Profit is absolutely essential to having an economy. So comparative advantage means I do the best I can to make the most money I can for myself. And that's in business, that's in sales, that's in everything. The law of comparative advantage. Here's an application. Right now, today, we have open borders like you can't believe. The world is coming into the United States. We'll be at 400 or 500 million in 10 days at the rate it's going. Well, maybe not quite that, but you got the idea. So here we have people coming in with little skills, no skills, but used to working for smaller amounts, lesser wages. So we have an attorney. I like to use attorney as a good word here. Attorney who has a secretary who he pays $20 an hour. She's good at her work. Maybe he pays her $25 an hour. She is good at her work, okay? And she takes care of everything he needs. Here comes somebody from overseas, illegal, mostly illegal, that illegal person. So now what's going to happen now? Well, this young lady is an illegal person, knows about filing. She knows her English language pretty good. And so she can answer questions. She can answer the phone. She can do stuff. But she'll work for, $3 an hour, five maybe. All of a sudden, and she lives just down the block. You know, she's not out of the country. She lives just down the block. So the comparative advantage of the attorney is to see which is the best for him. You see, that's what comparative advantage means. If another attorney doesn't do this, he'll have an advantage in the marketplace. So he will look at the best he can get for his costs. And the best he can get for his cost is the young lady who's just come across the border, who can do those tasks. She won't be as good. Maybe it'll take two of them, but it's not going to cost him $20-$25 an hour. It might cost him $8 for two of them. That's the law of comparative advantage. Here's another law of comparative advantage. I can make tables. I can make kitchen tables like nobody else can make kitchen tables. Other people know, but I have a knack for making kitchen tables. So I can make kitchen tables for half price everybody else. That's my comparative advantage. I'm going to make kitchen tables, and I'm going to sell them out through the United States, and the other guys will either meet my price or go out of business. That's the law of comparative advantage. All right, now let's put it into today's environment. We're going to talk about free trade. What does free trade mean? Free trade is trade through borders, either states, countries, counties, any border, cities, doesn't matter. Free trade is through borders, one border to the next, at no tariff, no charge for coming into that border. Nothing to do with shipping costs. It's just to do with, I'm going to cross that border, and the government of the next border wants me to pay a tax. That's a tariff. It's not really a tax, guys. It's a tariff. They call it the border tax because they're trying to make it bad. This particular item, tariffs, saves our economy. Did I just say saves the economy? I don't think I said that. Oh, I did. That's right. It saves the economy. How does it save the economy? Well, let me get an instance how the economy wasn't saved through free trade. We had a massive industry of cars, car parts, car everything to do with building cars up and around the southern Michigan area. Oh, I mean, it was, and it blew, went into Gary, Indiana, and over into Chicago, and down into, oh, it was a huge industry. Well, somebody got a bright idea that we should lower our tariffs on cars, any kind of cars. So immediately, the big industries in the United States said, well, just a minute, there is no tariff. Since there's no tariff, I can go to Mexico, pay less, no OSHA. Oh my, this would be a bottom line saver. Off he goes, takes all of his plants and everything, and he goes to Mexico. It really did happen. They all went to Mexico. What happened to our automobile industry? It's gone. All we have now is an industry putting parts together, and the parts are coming from all over the world. We don't build cars anymore.
Substandard parts.
Oh, yes, they're that, for sure. Then the government comes in, and that's another reason these guys want to move to Mexico, because if they go to Mexico, they don't have to do all the rules that the government's decided to do. Oh, yeah, some of them you'll still have to do because California and some other states, but you're not going to have to do most of them. You just won't have to do them. Saves gobs of money. And you can make the car for California, charge them more, and make a car for everybody else and charge them less. See, these business guys, they know how to make money, and they know how to make money if there's no tariffs. When did you make your last telephone call to a business? You've got a new computer, and there's something wrong with it, so you want to call the computer company. So you do an 800 number. It doesn't have to be, but that's usually 800 number. They pick up the phone and they begin it. You tell them the problems. Oh, yeah, we have on and on and on. And they, do you ever ask them where they're sitting?
Yep.
You know, that's crucial. Where do you think they are sitting? Philippines, Taiwan, yep. India, the Orient. That's where they're sitting.
Yep.
Why? Because it's cheaper to hire people in the Orient than in the United States. So our entire call out industry is gone. Oh, not entire. There's maybe 10% left. It's gone, you guys. Why? Because the telephone lines are so inexpensive worldwide. You can put something anywhere at the same price for phone. Skype, for example, that I use all the time, costs absolutely nothing anywhere in the world. Zoom really, really focuses on the United States, but Skype goes anywhere in the world. You can set up Skype shared meetings. You can do all kinds of stuff. Why is that? Because businesses want to save money and they want to go offshore because it saves them money. Taxes are down. Oh, my business is in Mexico. My business is in Costa Rica. Taxes are less. and you don't pay U.S. taxes because you're not a U.S. company anymore. Now you're a Costa Rican company, still making the same cars, of course, still calling yourself the same, but you're not the same company. So all these things are saved. Also profits. Profits can be hidden overseas. You can't hide them here from income tax. Oh, folks, there's a plethora of things if you just don't have tariffs. But what happens if you don't have tariffs? You, the workers, all lose your jobs. And the foreign guys get your jobs. That's what tariffs do. It's not a border tax. It's a border income saver, protector. Let's look at it another way. Trump made an effort, and I think he got it done, but it's really obscure. He got an effort to get a tariff on aluminum and steel. And steel companies began to crop up immediately, which put people to work in the cities, in those areas, not in the cities, steel companies are in the city, but it put people to work in those areas that weren't working or didn't have a good job before. Wow, I can go work at my steel production again, get good money to make steel. Why did we want to open the steel industry and the aluminum industry? For sure. Guess what military armaments are made of? Steel, aluminum, not so much aluminum, but planes and aluminum. Those two are major, major resources to build military hardware. But if we don't produce any steel or any aluminum, because all those companies went away, now what do? Oh, we buy it from who? From China. That'd be good. We'll buy our steel from China. Oops. Maybe China's the foe. Are they going to sell us steel to make tanks and guns and stuff if they want to fight against us? Planes? For aluminum for planes? Hey, folks, tariffs protect your country, not just your jobs, but your country itself. In the beginning of this country, back in 1776, 1787, 1788, 1789, all these dates, the rest of the world and the United States were about the same economically, just about the same. Oh, they could travel ships around and make money in ports, that kind of stuff. Yes, they could, but they were traveling in wind ships, and they were traveling the same way, and they communicated the same. It was just that way. That's how it had always been done. That's how it continued to be done. Trading still worked because there still were countries that could do something better than another countries. So the law of comparative advantage worked, and the shippers moved around and make sure that everybody got to sell their goods somewhere. Okay. We changed slowly, and by 1940, 50s, we were the highest standard of living country in the world, way above everybody else. What does standard of living measure? It measures how you live, what assets you have, what's there for you, what you have to use, you know, air conditioning. They don't have much air conditioning in Central Africa, but they could use it, but they don't have it. They don't have much central air in the Middle East, Arabian countries. They don't have it. They don't have it in Turkey. I live there. They don't have it. You roast or you, well, you never freeze in that kind of, in Turkey, but you get cold. They do have heaters. They're not heaters like we have, central heaters. They're heaters in separate rooms. But what I'm trying to say is there's a big difference between countries, and the standard of living determines what kind of a country you have. And it's done in dollars in our environment. So Sierra Leone, I think I'm pronouncing that correctly, has the lowest standard of living in the world in dollars. It's like 600. Now that was in like 2006. Now it's 2021. I don't know what the relationship is, but the idea is the same. So you don't have to worry about the precise numbers. You just have to worry about the idea, the pattern. Oh, patterns are important. Sierra Leone, $600 a year. And people make, I don't know, 20 cents an hour. I don't know what the number is. Maybe it'll be more than that because $600 then. But you got the picture. They make peanuts in compared with our wages. Now, they have a basket-making company in Sierra Leone that really makes good baskets, and they know exactly how to do it, and they've learned it all. They ship their baskets to the United States, and they're cornering the market. So the United States basket, people have to figure out ways to keep their profit. Or they move to Sierra Leone to make their baskets. Now, any basket industry is gone in the United States. Now, I didn't use a good example because Sierra Leone can make baskets. But what if Sierra Leone made computer chips? Oh, they don't make computer chips. Who does? The United States makes computer chips. And I think we still have an edge on computer chips. But if we do, it's going fast. Because they can make computer chips in Japan and China and Taiwan. So they can make those computer chips. Sierra Leone doesn't have the infrastructure to make computer chips. But the same concept applies. The basket industry is just an illustration. Our company moves the basket company and starts building baskets in Sierra Leone. Now he's faced with a quandary, you might say, a decision. How's he going to do this? How's he going to pay the help? Is he going to pay him the 20 cents an hour, 25 cents an hour that everybody else is paying? Oh, the do-gooders here in the United States are going to say, what do you mean going out there paying them slave labor? You got to pay them a living wage. And the living wage they define as a living wage is the stuff in the United States, which let's just say is $20 an hour. So Sierra Leone, you're just doing that slave labor, putting those, working the nubs off those people, the kids over near me. What a terrible company you are. And that's what goes on here. So the company's a little concerned. If they go there and pay the regular wage, they'll be beat to death by our media. If they go there and pay the higher wage, they can't ship and make stuff. So they got to figure out where they're going to do. Well, at least they could get these people off their backs, at least do half, $10 an hour. Let's just assume they just do half. That's all, just half. Now, remember, the standard of living in Sierra Leone is about $600, and the standard of living in the United States is about $40,000. There's a little difference, isn't there? So if we pay them $10 an hour, how many people in Sierra Leone will want to continue to work for the non-basket producers? No, I can make baskets there. And I know how to make baskets. I can help them make really good baskets because I can get paid $10 an hour instead of 25 cents. Where do you think they're going to go work? All right, now, what will that effect be? See, nobody thinks of these things. What will the effect of that be? Oh, by the way, this is to do with free trade. Okay, what will be the effect of paying $10 an hour to this one industry, and everybody else is paying 25 cents? Everybody will want a job with that industry. They want that $10 an hour, but there's just so many jobs, so they don't get one. But they're the name on the list, and the second they can do it, they're gone. But while the people that are there are working, making $10 an hour, they can buy anything they want at any price anybody wants to ask. So things that are luxury in that country, which aren't very many, usually would sell, I don't know, maybe for $100. These people can go buy 10 now. In 10 hours' work, they could buy 10 of these. They could buy one in 10 hours' work. So, you know, everybody could buy one nearly every day. They've got gobs and gobs of money. So not only are the people that can't get a job still be getting 25 cents an hour. Stuff that they used to be able to buy. Remember supply and demand? We've talked about that. If the supply is a certain number and the demand is higher, the price goes up. Supply is a certain number and the demand is higher. Up goes the price. Well, now we've just created a new demand. The folks making $10 an hour versus the folks making 25 cents. Those people, no matter how few they are going to cause prices to go up, just that company. And everybody else will be started into poverty just because one company started to pay $10 an hour in an economy that should pay 25 cents. But our people here won't let them. So they're afraid, you know, they're afraid of the media and all that kind of stuff. Oh, they'll beat them to death. They're going to only 25 cents an hour. What's wrong with you? You're terrible people. You're just cheating these people. No, they're not. They're saving their economy. But nobody knows that because nobody knows anything about economics. I'm just going to go out on a limb. There's no listener to today's society that understood in today's show that understood the correlation between the law of comparative advantage, free trade, and standard of living. I'll bet there's not one person in this audience that understood that those concepts. And that's because you didn't learn economics and the concepts of economics. Oh, now, do politicians know that you don't know the concepts of economics? You bet they do. They know. They don't know them either, but they know you don't know. And that's all that matters. So what they're going to do, they're going to pat themselves on the back. They're going to give you a minimum wage rise. Raise your minimum wage. By Jove, they don't have a living wage. The poor people don't have a living wage. Let's give them a living wage. Now, folks, you got to remember something. If you have 20% poor, 20% rich, and the middle, 20% wealthy, and 10% poor, and the middle, that 80%, the middle 80%, you come, let's not do that. You have 20% poor and 20% rich. You got 60% in the middle, don't you? What we're going to do is we're going to prop up the poor so they won't be poor anymore. So what do you have to do? You have to raise their wages up to where the middle guy's wages are. What will happen? Oh, for about 2 months, poor and medium will be here and the wealthy guys will still be here, you know, okay? But all of a sudden, they wake up, these poor people wake up and realize they're still poor, the other people are still middle, and the other people are still wealthy, but at a higher income level. You pay more taxes than you ever used to because we have what they call a progressive tax, which is actually a regressive tax. So you pay more taxes because you make more money, and you make more money because free trade or the law of comparative advantage. Sometimes you make more, sometimes you make less. But the point I'm trying to point out is the politicians know that. So they know that if they just talk you into supporting them in a minimum wage of $15 an hour, they'll make a living wage. And that'll be great. Well, they don't realize that what was $10 an hour or $7 an hour, now they doubled it. If the other guys were making 20, they're going to be making 40. And the guys that were wealthy were making 80 or 100. They'll be making 160 or 200. And the relationship will remain the same. But the taxes these guys all pay will go up. Oh, the government's tickled to death with that because they get more money in taxes. And you bite the bullet. They know that. Does minimum wage cause that? Absolutely, it causes that. You know another thing minimum wage causes? The destruction of entry-level jobs. Gone. I want to ask, has anybody in this audience ever walked into an elevator that there was an elevator operator that said, what floor do you want? And it would take them to it.
It's been a while.
Have you walked into one of those kind of places, Doug?
It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
Yeah.
I remember it when I was a real young whippersnapper back in the 50s. I remember it. Yeah, they had them. It was standard. You watch the movies. You watch movies that were made in the 50s and before. You will see elevator operators in the movies because they existed. That was an income, a job, and they were good at it. Now you say anybody can be good at it. Oh, no, not quite anybody. There are techniques to this and making sure everybody gets in the right place quickly. Oh, yes, there are techniques. You have express elevators and you have regular elevators now. But in the olden days, a guy walked in and needed an express elevator. It was all the way up. Past all the floors. Just took that guy or that gal or those people to the top floor, then brought it back down and then picked up the other people. They knew what to do. Folks, that's what minimum wage does. When I was a young whippersnapper sitting in the back seat of the car, the dad drove into we call it Slim Olson here in Salt Lake. It was in Bountiful, that particular station, Slim Olson. We drove into Slim Olson's, and six guys mobbed us. They checked all the tires. They checked the oil. They checked this. They checked that. Washed all the windows, pumped the gas, everything. And you were out of there in a flickety flash. But what else happened is they checked your oil. They came back and showed you what your oil level was. You're down a quart. They sold a quart of oil. But today, you don't know you're down a quart, so you're going to buy a new engine because there are no service stations. And now they're not even checking anything. Nobody's looking at anything. You got a red light. What if the light doesn't work? You buy a new engine. There are no service stations. Six people aren't coming. How many are coming? Nobody's coming. They're sitting in a little booth collecting money. That's not a service station. We still call it. That's not that. It's a gas dispenser. So that's gone. Movies. Ah, I went to movies in the 50s. I enjoyed them. I paid my price, went in. I paid my price to the ticket pay seller at their little cubicle at the door. I went in. There was one guy that checked your tickets, make sure you had a ticket. Okay, checked them, tore them in half. Okay, that kind of a thing. Tore them halfway. Anything at all. So he knew that their ticket had been, that they'd been cleared. Nobody had a ticket torn in half. You can't stay. Go get a ticket. I lost it. Tough luck. Go get a ticket. There's a concession stand, popcorn, soda pop, all kinds of nice things. It's all there. Everybody mobbed the concession. And there were about three people there. Minimum wage. Now what's the case? Minimum wage. What's the case now? There are 10, 12, 15, 20 theaters in one organization right there. One camera guy covers them all. One ticket taker or two take care of the tickets. Maybe three or four people are selling tickets. Maybe the concession stand has five or six people now. In the days of yore, one ticket taker, one seller of tickets, three, five folks each theater. If there were 10 theaters, there'd be 50 folks at work. Now there are maybe eight, maybe nine, because it's too expensive to pay the help, because the cost of hiring people is more expensive. We have to get something different. Have you walked into McDonald's and some of these fast food restaurants recently? Have you seen the kiosk in the middle of the room where you go and order? There's somebody to talk to? No. Somebody to visit? We get them. I'd like to have this. Don't put the tomato on. I don't want tomatoes. Don't put the onions. Depends on how that system is, but the people aren't there to help you. Since the people aren't there to help you, you're stuck with a machine that may or may not be able to do what you want. But if you're going to get something, you're stuck. That's minimum wage. What's happened? All the entry-level jobs have been thrown away. That's minimum wage. The politicians know that if they promise you a minimum wage, they'll get elected. They know also, but you don't. If you promise them a minimum wage, they'll lose their job. You'll lose your job by supporting that politician. And the economy is full of things like that, absolutely full of them. Politicians know what to do to get your bucks from you. And it kind of works like this. You don't know anything about economics. You don't know anything about the law of comparative advantage or free trade or standard of living. You don't know anything about that kind of stuff. Okay? And so the politicians know it, and they make laws that force you. You're like a lamb going to the slaughter, not knowing anything more about that than the lambs do. You're going to the slaughter without any more information than the lambs have while they go to the slaughter, and you're being slaughtered. You talked about that inflation. That's a part of it. Minimum wage is a major part of inflation. The lower workers only ones? Oh, no. If I'm working as a lower worker and I get a raise, all of a sudden I'm making as much money as my supervisor. Supervisor going to stand for that? Absolutely not. Is this supervisor?
If I can just interject one thing here.
Yes.
Okay, so in my view, everything you're saying here, you got to think bigger. And thinking bigger requires the understanding that you are providing. So, you know, when I speak about subjugating the human race and the Western economies and population, it requires a level of understanding that's really not discussed except in venues like this with Dr. Richard Proctor, provostinstitute.com. And I want to thank you for talking about this and increasing our level of understanding. So it shows people how they are dismantling our country. But go ahead, sir.
Yes.
The big picture.
I agree. Doug, you've hit the nail on the head. But do you realize you can't build a building if you don't have a brick? Okay?
Yeah, makes sense.
If you don't have any bricks, you don't build a building. We have a huge building and the bricks are being taken out of it. Now what's happening? The building's collapsing. The big picture is the whole government. But the little picture is you and your costs and your life. And you want your life to be as good as it can be. So if you don't know the basics of why things happen, you will not know why the big picture is going the direction it's going, because you don't know why. People come to me all the time, and they're talking about the Constitution and the government and all the violations of the government. And I say, it's because you didn't learn the Constitution, the basis. You don't know the basis, and your building is crumbling because you don't know the basis. All this garbage that the government foists on us is all unconstitutional and illegal. And people will say, well, we don't have a constitution anymore. We have a constitution with the people who know the constitution. They know it, they have it. The people who don't know it don't have it because they're just going along with what the government says. And the government doesn't want you to know about your constitution. Neither does the justice system. Look at what the justice system is doing. Why? Because they don't follow the Constitution either. Even though they raise their hands to the square and say they will, they don't. Even though they could all be impeached for that, you don't do it because you don't know it. Folks, the foundation is the key, and I'm talking about foundation. You go to an economics professor, what you just heard will take 3 weeks of gobbledygook, and you won't have the first idea what happened. But you get a hold of this book, and you'll have some help that might explain what's happening. Easily read. I'm sorry, guys, that's important, easily read. My wife got some economics books. She went to an economics class. First one, never seen one before. And then the professor gives her the book. I'm going to use this book, this big book, gives her this big book. Now, you read this big book, he says, and we're going to do chapter by chapter, and you'll know the information. This is a college environment. College environment, professors don't baby any students. You either do it or you don't, period. Okay, so here we go. You walk in the first class, he starts talking about the law of comparative advantage. But he can confuse you so you don't have the first idea. Let me give you an illustration. I picked up her book and read the first chapter. Didn't understand most of it. I got a PhD in this subject, guys. Didn't understand most of it and couldn't answer some of the questions at the back. And they were expecting my wife, who had never seen an economics book before, to know that. That's because the professor wants you to know that he knows more than you, and you best not catch up. I'm sorry. That's what they're doing to you in these econ classes. That's why nobody likes them. Econ is fun. Oh, my, yes. Economics is a great subject. Now, I went to it like a duck underwater. Okay, like a duck goes to water. I thought this is the neatest thing I'd ever seen. Many don't think that way, and I understand, because everybody has a different, remember, the law of comparative advantage. It applies here. I have an advantage in the economic area than others do, because I learn more of it, because I just embroiled myself in it. Others didn't do that. They learned a basic. That's okay. At least you've got a basic. I have an advantage because I can teach you the basics and more if you want to know more. Law of supply and demand is huge. People don't have any idea about law of supply and demand. Don't have any idea. I've got a test question in my doctorate program in economics that one of the students went to the other day, and he and I went back and forth. Well, it's been a couple of months. he and I went back and forth over and over. He's a very intelligent guy, but he could never get the idea of what I was asking the question about. He never knew what I was asking because he wasn't into economics like he ought to have been at that point. He did learn the answer to the question, got the background of it before he finished, but we took a long time to get it through his head. He would not see it. He wanted to treat economics with a little square in the middle rather than the big picture out here. And the big picture is crucial in economics to know all the concepts. It's crucial. But I'm not asking you to know all the concepts. I'm just saying, please learn the basics.
There you go.
Absolute basics. Then if you want more, I can help you learn more. But you got to have these basics. What about the isms? I'm covering a lot of subjects today, you guys.
I love it.
What about the isms? Do you know what the isms are? Communism, socialism, fascism. Those are the isms. Hegelism, those are the isms. What do they all mean? We don't have any idea. Come on. As a group, we don't have any idea. Capitalism, communism, oh, my, we have no idea. We hear capitalism is bad over and over and over and over again. So we buy into it because it's repeated so often. Capitalism. Do you know, you see behind me, there's that chair. You see that chair over here behind me? I think I can point to it if I'm real careful. There's that chair right there. Okay. There's that chair. Nice looking chair. There's another chair over the other side, over here. I think I can get to it. Yeah. This chair over here. I've just about, oh, it's tough, guys. It's backwards. Everything's backwards. Anyway, that chair over there. Wheels in the bottom, rolls around. Nice chair. Okay, capitalism. What does it take to make that chair? Oh, it takes a lot of stuff. It takes a lot of stuff that comes from overseas, imports, all kinds of things, leather, all kinds of stuff. How do you get that kind of stuff together? Well, you have to have some money. You gotta can't make the first one if you don't have enough money to get all the stuff in place. Okay, there's no capitalism. You know what happens? They end capitalism, the Senate's end capitalism. You know what that means? You don't have that chair. You don't have that couch. You don't have those lights. You don't have that chair. You don't have the fireplace. You don't have any of it. You live in a shack. Because why? Because nothing we use today was built without capitalism. Nothing. So if you want to do away with it, just think about what you're going to live like. Well, it won't be too bad. It won't be too bad. There's a lot of sticks. You can build a stick house. The three pigs build a house out of sticks. You can do that. That's what you can do. So you got a chance. You can go down and build your house. You can live in a cave. Yeah. Tough to lock the door. Well, you don't have to lock the door. There's nothing in the cave. Are you understanding what capitalism means? What does socialism mean? Folks, you realize socialism can't make anything that doesn't exist. What do I mean? Well, here's a pencil. I'm going to try to get it up there. There's a pencil. It's not a complicated thing at all. We've had pencils for decades, centuries. Pencils, oh, they're a good thing. I've got a thing in my book that says what it takes in my volume six, I believe. The history of making a pencil can't be done by you and I. But it can be done by a person with capitalism, with capital, I should say, in capitalism. But if there is no pencil, socialism doesn't know even that it doesn't exist. Because the only way you find out what you need is by people with innovative thoughts being rewarded for their innovative thoughts. Do you know that weed whacker that we see, the thing spins around? Do you know how that was developed? Some dude said, the story goes, I'm sure it's something like this. The story goes that some guy was a fisherman out fishing. And it was a really dull day. Now, I've been on those fishing trips, but it's a really dull day. All of my fishing trips have been a really dull day. So I don't go there. But he's there, and it's a dull day. And he's fooling around with these strings, these nylon pieces that he has. He cut the grass. Cut the grass. What would happen if I had a lot of those? I could cut a lot of the grass. what if I put it on a spinner? And I put a hood over and a handle on it. Now you've got a weed whacker that you can go buy today for almost nothing. But if he hadn't had that string going at the grass, he'd have never done it. And if he can't think of anything except getting a little bit of food on the table to save his family from starvation, he doesn't have time to worry about whether that cuts the grass or not. And he gets no benefit for finding out. Oh, he can see it. Oh, this would help. But it doesn't do any good for him because he can't earn anything because of it, because no committee decided that the job would exist and it doesn't exist. So he can't get any money for the innovation because nobody will accept it. That's the environment of socialism. That's why socialism will not work unless there's a major capitalist country right alongside it. The United States has been that major capitalist country for centuries now. And so all the socialist guys copy. And they don't do it right because they don't have all the ingredients. They don't find all the stuff they knew. So they make really poor quality items. Because the five-year plan and all those plans, oh boy. You know, the Russian people had a little plot of ground around the home that they lived in. Well, especially the guys out in the hinterlands, out in the agriculture area. They had a home they lived in and they had grass around it. Or weeds, because they all went out and farmed the collective farming out there. The Russian economy depended on collective farming, and they had to buy wheat from the United States and other places to feed their people. They lessened up a little. They let the people grow anything they wanted on those little plots of ground around their house. About 3% of the agricultural land around their house. They were making most of the food of the country on that 3% because the collective farms don't work. And that's socialism that doesn't work. And that's capitalism, private industry that does. And it will always be that way. It can't be changed. Those are economic laws. Those are people laws. Those are cultural laws. They're our habits. They're us. And we don't change just because a law is passed. I know, I'll give you an illustration. They're going to pass a law next week that says I can only have one ear. Will that change all the children born with one ear? Hmm.
Interesting.
But they made a law, so it has to be that way. Right. So what they're going to have to do when the kid's born, they have to chop off an ear. Because there's a law, you can only have one ear. So there's a whole new industry now, ear chopping. That's the socialist government at work. Now, I used a stupid illustration, but it's exactly what happens.
You know, I'm not so sure that was so stupid. I don't want to interject any more than I need to, but I think, you know, when you look back, and again, I'm going to, you provide the details. I'm kind of going the big picture route. I look at what happened in 2016. I look at the globalist agenda leading up to 2016, it being disrupted by President Trump, who I believe knew knows and was really good at all of these little facets with economics. And now I think I think people will understand why he came under incessant attacks by the globalists who want to consolidate power, consolidate money, consolidate everything, and control everything that we have, take our stuff and kill us or let us die. I can see that now. And you kind of put the blocks into place. Go ahead.
See, all of our politicians are in that same position. They know they haven't run businesses. Most of them never run a business. They're attorneys. They just open an attorney office, and that's all they did. Then they ran for office, and we elected them, and they stayed there. They don't know what how a business runs. That's the first idea. Here came a man who's a business guy. He knows. But we all criticized him because he wasn't a politician. Oh, you can't do anything right. You're not a politician. How stupid can you get? 10 years ago, we said, these guys don't know anything. They're only politicians. They don't know anything. That was correct. But we were taught really quickly when Trump decided to run that you had to be a politician to work. You got businessmen, you can't do it. Do you know the Constitution was written by businessmen? Yeah. There were no politicians. Oh, there's some politicians, yeah. But they were businessmen that wrote the Constitution. There are businessmen that build up this country to where it is today, not the government. The government produces nothing. The government never creates a job except another job alongside the one they have. You know, I worked in the Air Force for a long time, 20 years. I saw government at work. I had a budget. If I saved any money, next year they cut my budget. If I found some way to hire another guy, I hired the guy and it pumped my wages up, brought a new guy in. Did he produce anything? Maybe, maybe not, but he only produced the government job. There's never been a staple, never been a pencil created by the government. All the government does is control it and sometimes lessen its value. Government has never created that chair. Never. Never created anything. They don't create. They build jobs, take money from you to do it, and do as much as they can to build government jobs. But they take people away from production jobs. You know, I talked about this law, MV equals PT. There's a lot of stuff in economics, you guys. And my mind just goes, well, anyway, the MV equals PT is a big deal. What that says is production is necessary for the economy to survive. That's what that says. No production, no, it won't survive. That's what it says. It doesn't mean service. It doesn't mean gas station attendants. It means gasoline. It means the building. It means production. Things are happening. Somebody's building something. Someone's building cars and car parts. They're building things. That's production. Our government thinks they're the producers. In fact, we had a stupid president thought he produced stuff. I did that. By Jove, he doesn't even know what happened to do it. He doesn't even know how to get up out of bed in the morning. But somebody helps him. We got one of those today. Folks, we don't have anybody that knows anything about what they need to know to do what they try to do. So stay out of it, you dummies. Let the people who know do it. But they don't do that. Think about the post office. Think about the telephone company. In the days of yore, 1800s, post cost a lot of money. And so did the telephones cost a lot of money. But at some point, and I can't put a date on it, but at some point, postage began to go up. And telephones begin to go down. Why? Because the government ran the post office and businessmen ran the telephone. That's why. And that'll carry on forever. Ever seen a 3-cent stamp that you put on an envelope? Doug, have you ever seen a 3-cent stamp? I don't mean a collection. I mean you had a 3-cent stamp you put on an envelope and mailed it first class.
No, I think that was, in my day, that was a postcard rate. I don't think.
Okay, you could do a postcard. Yeah, but I'm talking about never. I mailed many, many letters for 3 cents. 3 cents was the standard. How big was the post office? One guy in a cubbyhole. That's all it was. He sold stamps. That's all he did.
And a pony.
Yeah, well, okay. But so guys, what I'm trying to say is government screws it up. That's why postage goes up. Businessmen know how to do it. That's why it comes down. Did the computer industry come down? Can we buy storage for next to nothing today? Yeah, we can. Why? Because people innovated in business. If government had been involved, we'd have never gone down. It all gone up. Here's a truth. You can see the word truth on this, remember. Here's a truth you can put in your pocket and know it is. If the government ran the Sahara Desert in 5 years, there would be no sand left. Now, that's an illustration of what government does. Shortage on the shelves, that's because government's getting involved in causing it. There should never be a shortage of anything on any shelf in any store in the United States of America. The only reason there is because the damn government caused it.
Yes, thank you.
It was not the trucking people. It wasn't the farmers. It was the damn government that did it. And when did they do it? In 2020. And who did it? The governors of our states, the legislatures in our states, the Congress of the United States, and the other government stooges did it. And they went around and closed businesses because an illegal edict was passed out and they weren't about to follow it, even though they're supposed to be following the law and the Constitution. They're policemen, you know, they're sheriffs, they're deputies. They're supposed to know the Constitution, but they don't, or if they do, they don't care. They only care about the edict. The governor, who knows nothing, told him to do it, so he's going to do it. Governor was late, was elected. He's a big, important guy because he was elected. No, he's not. He's a dummy. That's why he was elected, because the people aren't smart enough to know he's a dummy, because he's a dummy because he's never done any business. But now he's going to decide how business runs.
And if I can just interject, add to that, the sale of ports, or the leasing of some port areas to the communist Chinese, that's a thing. The AB 5, I believe it is, in California specifically, about the types of trucks that are allowed in and to transfer or traverse the state to the ports with the emissions and such. All of this, you know, in addition to everything you said, is what's causing this shortage. And by the way, we wouldn't have a shortage of anything if everything was, or if everything possible was manufactured here in the United States, period. Thank you. Go ahead.
Well, I agree with you, but there are things that we can't do in the United States.
Yeah.
They have a lot of trouble growing clothes. But nonetheless, it's government. Everything you said is government caused.
Yes.
That emission stuff, government caused, okay? The port situation, using a government cause. Everything is government cause. Why don't we have any oil being drilled out in the ocean anymore? Because the government said, no, you shouldn't do that. So they're not doing it anymore because they won't give them any permission. Yet the seas, under the seas, is full of oil. Why aren't we importing oil from other places? Because somebody wrote an executive order. One of the stupid guys, government stupid guy, wrote an executive order saying, we're not going to build that pipeline. The businessmen were hustling to build it. Some stupid guy says, no, we're not going to build it. So now gas prices are up. I wonder why. I don't know. I don't know. The gas price is up. I can't drive my car anymore. This is going to follow that gas station for charging me more. I'm going to string that guy up by. Yeah, that's what we think. But what's really happening is non-business lackeys we've elected that know nothing are in charge. That's one of the reasons, not the only, but one of the reasons why the 13th Amendment existed, to keep attorneys out of government, because government attorneys don't know anything about government. Now, they didn't really say that. They were worried about nobility titles. But it's the same thing. Nobility titles went to people who had money. I just got a few more minutes left, not many. I'm just going to say another thing. People in the olden days used to buy their commissions in the Army. I have $1,000. I'm going to buy myself a commission as a colonel, and I'm going to run the Army. I'm going to buy it. Did the sergeants? They're there. They're the enlisted guys. Who got killed in the Battle of the Light Brigade? I can't remember it. The 600 died in the Battle of the Light Brigade. Because the dumb colonels sent guys on horses against people with machine guns. And almost nobody survived. Charge of the Light Brigade. Almost nobody. Because the stupid governor didn't know anything about it. Oh, guys, we're full of that kind of stuff. People who know nothing at all are in charge of what they're supposed to know. I had people in the Air Force all the time. I was in personnel. I was in the hospital. Well, not the hospital, I was in personnel. They put people in charge of the personnel office who have never seen the inside of it except to fill out a form and sign it. They didn't know anything about it. They were in charge, though. They're going to fix it. We're going to fix it. And that's exactly how they came. So I left that and went to the hospital, because at least the administrators were always hospital administrators and they knew it. And the doctors were always doctors and they knew it. And that helped an awfully lot. But the line of the Air Force... Nope, they're being run by people. I have a little saying, if you wear silver and you're above captain, you're incompetent. Yep. Anybody wearing silver over the grade of captain is incompetent. Why? Because we always rise to the level of our incompetency.
Oh.
And as long as they can do a good job, then they get promoted. Even if they can't do a good job, if they can at least go to the officers' club and drink beer.
Got it. All right.
Elbow. They're good guys. They know the job.
I got to tell you, my mind was not going in that direction, but thank you for that. All right. Hey, we got about 5 minutes left of the show. Okay. So
I know you've got that thought. So I get that thought across. Okay.
Yeah.
The idea here. It's called the Peter principle. You are always promoted to the next job when you can do this job so well. So the Peter principle says you'll always be promoted until you can no longer do the job. So I'm a really good floor sweeper. So I'm going to be promoted to a supervising floor sweeper. So I can do that really well. So if I do that really well, the next time they're going to put me in charge of a copy machine. But I don't know anything about copy machines. So I don't do very well. So I won't get promoted, but I won't get degraded either. I'll just stay working copy machines that I know nothing about. But I really did know how to sweep floors. Now, I know that's another one of these examples that I do far out, but that's what happens. What happens in the Air Force? These guys could fly planes. Oh, they could. And they're experts at flying planes. They really are. There's no doubt about it. So they give them a new job because they couldn't get promoted into the, there's only one base commander. There's only one operations officer. There's only one, got it? Squadron commander. There's only one. But there are dozens of people underneath all those. So all the others, they're all pilots. Pilots are not going to be kicked out of the Air Force. No, siree, not if they're good pilots. If they're good pilots. Did you hear that sentence? I didn't say not if they're good professionals at the Air Force. If they're good professionals at pilots. Yes. All right. So this guy can't be promoted as a pilot because there's no slot for him because there's only three or four guys that he can get a slot of. But there's dozens and dozens of pilots that are good pilots, and we're not going to lose any good pilots. So they put him in charge of finance, and finance goes down the drain. They put him in charge of that doesn't go down the drain because there are some NCOs that shore it up. Everybody laughs about that, but if we didn't have the NCOs there, the Air Force would collapse. They couldn't even get the stuff to the flight line to fix the planes. They wouldn't even get gas there. They wouldn't get it at all if it wasn't for the NCOs doing it because they've been doing it their whole career. But the person above them gets stuck up there. And now somehow the sergeant has to figure out how to do his job with that nincompoop in charge. And folks, that's incompetency. Absolutely incompetent. And who are those peoples? Light colonel, full colonel, generals. They wear silver. They can't be promoted in the job they have some skill in. So they move to one they're incompetent at. Now, if they can't do that job very good or they don't do enough booze doing in the officer's club, then they won't get promoted because another guy does a lot of boozing in the officer's club. And the other guy, he does have good NCOs, so he gets a good report. And so he gets promoted to the next job of incompetency. Eventually, he's going to be to a job where you have a lot of incompetents running and they can't save him. So then he won't get promoted any higher because all those incompetents are helping him be more incompetent.
Richard Proctor, Richard Proctor, ProvisInstitute.com. Let's fight incompetence. You've got you're offering a special deal here. We got 2 minutes left.
Oh, I forgot all about it. Let me tell you the special deal. All my four books, Saving, Keeping a Constitution, You Can Keep It, Bathroom Economics, Easily Understood Economics, all those four books on sale from now and for the Christmas time, on sale from now until the 10th of December. Today's the 10th of all those books. We already have a good one on the Liberty series. It will continue at $100 a shot when you buy the whole series. And next week is my Patreon meeting, 8 o'clock Eastern time. We're going to talk about the media. We're going to talk about what's happened to the media. That's our goal for tomorrow, for next Tuesday. So that's what we're doing. All the books, Saving, Keep, Bathroom, Understood. All of them are on a buy one, get one at half price. You buy two, you get two at half price. You buy four, you get four at half price. That's how it's, all of them, all of them, all those four books.
Richard Proctor, ProvisInstitute.com. I want to thank you. Liberty Series, $100 out the door. Patreon Media, talking about the media next week, as well as the buy one, get one half price books. Thank you very much. Richard Proctor, ProvisInstitute.com. Have a great night, everyone. We're out of time.